Would anyone argue the notion that there is evil in this old world? Think about it. Is evil on the rise or is it on the decline, do you think? On the rise? You know, I think every age would have answered that. Every age would have answered that. I'm not sure overall it is, but that has nothing to do with its impact on the world, does it? One has only to listen to the nightly news of your choice. A child is abused. A store owner is beaten and killed during a robbery. A nation's leader uses chemical weapons on its own citizens. The history of the world is overflowing with evidence that evil is real. Evil is everywhere. Evil very often has the upper hand. Right after his baptism, Jesus was confronted by evil, the devil, the adversary, the accuser, the deceiver, the destroyer. In Christianity today, there are basically two main belief systems about evil and the devil. There's one more conservative branch. I don't want to call it conservative, but there's one branch that says that the devil is a real physical spiritual entity, a fallen angel who rebelled against God because of hubris and pride. The other side says that they consider the devil in the Bible to refer figuratively to human sin and temptation and to any immoral human system, that the devil was a handy category to have. And it came upon them as part of the mythology of the time. Hear these words from the Gospel of Matthew. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And he fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterward he was hungry. And the tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." But he answered, "It is written, 'Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God.'" Then the devil took him to the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, 'He will give his angels charge of you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone.'" Jesus said to him, "Again it is written, 'You shall not tempt the Lord your God.'" Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said to him, "All these I will give to you if you will fall down and worship me." Then Jesus said to him, "Begone, Satan, for it is written, 'You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve.'" Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him. Question. Jesus, the Son of God, was he really tempted or was he just going through the motions? What do you think? Was he really tempted? You know, when that offer was made, he said, "Well, let me think about that a minute." Okay, I thought it would be split. I thought there would be a split in the way we understand that. That talks, does it not, about the humanity of Jesus? How do we describe him? Fully human, fully divine. You know, in sermons past, I've talked about the historical significance of that discussion of who this Jesus of Nazareth really is. And the way you answer the question, was Jesus tempted, says how you understand the nature of Jesus. The humanity of Jesus, the frailty of being a man in a frail skin. And when I say frail, I don't mean Jesus in particular, because we all are frail, aren't we? Humanity is frail. The humanity of Jesus, the frailty of being a man. In fact, on that last evening, he would say, "Father, take this cup from me if it be possible." It was almost like one of the kids saying, "That $5 bill looks good. Take this from me." It wasn't whether or not he was tempted inside, was it? It was his answer to the temptation. Sometimes, in reading this passage, temptation seems harmless and good on the surface, does it not? "Come on, Jesus, make some bread. It'll be good. Not only will you be filled, you can take some into town. You could chop it into loaves and sell it and make some money on the side. You don't dress very well, and your followers could stand a little salary." But Jesus' hunger was preparation for the difficult task ahead. In that temptation, he was tempted to take the easy way. Think about that in our own lives. Sometimes the temptation is not to do something really, really bad. It's just to do something not quite as good as we know we can or should. Has that ever happened to you? It happens to me daily. Sometimes we try to bargain with God or even put God to the test. That's what the second temptation was all about, isn't it? If you jump off the highest point of the temple, everyone is going to be watching, and God will surely save his son. You know he will. Jesus could have had that one thought. "God, if I jump, you'll catch me, right?" We say that kind of prayer on times, don't we? Yeah. "Oh, God, if you'll just do this, I'll do that. God, do this for me, pretty please." Be careful, because God might turn your test into something you never dreamed of. I was a young financial analyst. I've told you that on occasion. But I tell you, that I was in Chicago and I prayed, and it was the first time I prayed. I said, "God, if you'll get me out of Chicago, I'll do anything." The next thing I knew, I was in seminary. I wouldn't trade it for the world, but I wouldn't have chosen it at that time. So that test became something I never would have possibly dreamed of. And then in that final temptation, it's like this. Sometimes we are tempted to worship a God with a little g, rather than God, big G. Right? One theologian defined God, which it takes someone with several PhDs before they have the hubris to try to define God. But he said this: God is that to which we give our ultimate concern. In words that you and I can understand, that means whatever is the most important thing in your life is going to be your God. Think about it. Isn't that true? Really? Remember what Curly said. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Remember what Jesus taught them as their main thing. What was it? When the young man asked him, what did he say? Love God, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. Sometimes we are tempted to worship at the altar of possessions. And that really, if I'm honest with you, that really is my devil with the little d. I love my stuff. And I have to be caught, you know how I work with that temptation when I get stuff? I sell it. And then it loses its hold on me. And I get money. And I buy groceries. I bring some of it here. And I go buy more stuff. I may want to rethink that. But we do. We worship possessions, or we worship power, or we worship popularity. And those become the most important things in our lives. So, exactly how do we keep the devil at bay? How do we avoid succumbing to temptation? First of all, we have to understand that we won't always, will we? Do you remember what Paul said? This is one of my favorite passages. He said, the good that I would do is exactly what I don't do, and the bad that I wouldn't do is exactly what I do, wretched creature that I am. Have you ever felt that way? We're going to give it your best, and you didn't. The only answer there is amazing grace. That's all we got. That is all we have, is amazing grace. So what do we do to keep the devil at bay? First of all, practice the presence of God. Practice the presence of God. Try to make your life a prayer. Use words when necessary, as they said, of sermonizing. But just try to interject the notion of your loving Creator God into every moment, every activity, everything that comes your way. Whether that acknowledgement is a prayer of thanksgiving or a prayer of caution. Oh, please, God, don't let me be this stupid. Practice the presence of God. Put others before self. That is hard to do. That is hard to do. Can you begin to work on that? I'm working on it hard. I'm a selfish guy by nature. I'll admit it. I was an only child, and I was raised as the prince of everything. We didn't have any money, but I had all the attention from my grandmother I could ever hope for. And it got me used to having all that attention. That explains a lot, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, Atticus and I are a little bit similar in that. Yeah, yeah. We are the princes of all we survey. But putting others first is something that you have to consciously work on, so that the other's well-being that you perceive is more important to you than your well-being, and no matter who that person is. And then next, find joy in simple things. You don't have to have the big, glitzy, shining thing to experience joy, but find joy in the simple things of living. And then build yourself a team of angels. And who might that be? Turn around and look. These are angels. These are your angels. Build yourself a team that you can call on when tempted, when things are not going the way you had hoped they would go, or things are going exactly the opposite of how you wanted them to be. Build yourself a team of angels that you can always call on. And by that same token, be an angel to those around you. And then expand your team of angels. Temptation is going to rear its head every day, almost every hour, isn't it? You know, just from the food we eat to the words that come out of our mouths to the next actions that we take, temptation is always there. Curly was right. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Amen.